right. Welcome, everybody, to the inaugural podcast of the Busted Business Bureau. My name is Christian Borky, and I'm your host. I have an insane story for all of you today. But joining me on this insane story is my good friend, Jaxie Alegria. Say hi.
Hi, I'm Jaxie.
It is so delightful to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
We just had a very special lunch at the Sultan's Market that is about a 10-minute walk away from the Lincoln Lodge Theater, which is producing this podcast.
Sultan Market is?
No. The Lincoln Lodge.
Right, we're in the Lincoln Lodge right now.
We are going to be talking about a lot of different things today, mostly centered around clothing donation bins. Jaxie, what do you know about clothing donation bins? Tell me everything. Do you donate to them? What's the tea?
I don't know very much. Most things that I know about them, I learned on the walk here from Sultan's Market, sponsored by... Yeah, I guess I have never donated to a donation bin. I donate to sometimes thrift stores, but...
You go right into the thrift store and you donate to them?
Yeah, just something about the box freaks me out.
What about the box freaks you out?
I don't know. Like, I've opened them before and they're just so dark inside. I'm always scared.
Aren't they locked? How have you opened one?
Well, no, like when you put your thing in, you open the drawer. I'm always terrified that a hand's going to stick out. I don't know.
Oh, a very valid concern.
Just like closed... Boxes are a fear of mine.
Interesting. Well, I am delighted to tell you that there is a lot going on behind these boxes. There's a specific group of boxes that are very interesting. But first, I do want to go over a little bit how they work, especially when they are not nonprofit clothing donation boxes, which if it says commercial anywhere on the box, that means typically that the clothing is sold. In a lot of examples, it will usually be sold for like a penny a pound to like an overseas clothing retailer where they will then sell it in different countries. So when you are putting clothing donation in a box that is commercial, you are basically giving free product to a company that is just selling them for, a penny a pound.
Great deal.
It's an excellent deal. And you know who loves it? Nonprofits who need clothes. They love it. They're obsessed with it. They love when that happens. So I'm not going to beat around the bush anymore. We're going to jump right in. First of all, I want to acknowledge that this story could not have been done without the incredible journalism of Michael Durham. He's been in this specific story that we're going to talk about since 2003 and is the main reason that like any of these documents are even remotely in English, because a lot of this has to do with Denmark. A lot of documents are in Danish.
The Danes.
What do you think about the Danes?
I have very few experience with the Danes. My first crush was a Dane. That's the only one.
Ooh, who was
I have
it?
Ever met. His name is Christian. My first crush was another Christian.
Oh,
I'm
my
sorry.
God.
I'm sorry you had to find out like this. I have other Christians in my life.
It's okay. We'll get through it. But again, thank you to Michael Durham and additional thanks to Wade Larson, who is a professor, researcher, and Enya lover, according to his Facebook. I was on there for like 5 minutes on his public Facebook, and there were like 7 pictures of Enya.
You had to make sure you knew.
Anyways, thank you to him. So we'll start a story in Minneapolis, Minnesota in July of 2014. The Community Planning and Economic Development of Minneapolis was sent a request. A company called Use Again, spelled U-S again, which just hits my eyes wrong. They wanted to drop some clothing donation boxes in public areas, which requires like approval from a municipal body to drop them in public places. Usually in private places, you just get consent from the business owner. You're like, can I drop a box here? And most of the time they're like, I don't fucking care. But obviously they needed to go through the Minneapolis municipal government. It's really not that difficult of a request. You ask to put a few down and you clean them up in a timely manner. Really, it does not hurt anybody. And as long as they're not fucking ugly, you can get away with it. Minneapolis, to their credit, asks for a bit more information regarding the owners of Use Again. When presented with more information, they kept changing it up, like the owners of Use Again, eventually listing like 2.9% ownership in like Belize, Mexico, and Laos. And so... They kept submitting requests for more information, being like, who the fuck owns Use Again? And they kept coming back with different answers, which is not a difficult question to answer. Who owns your business? So then on July 15th, 2015, my man Grant Wilson releases a follow-up stating that Community Planning and Economic Development Committee is going to request the City Council deny Use Again's application because, per the document, a background investigation of the various company owners declared in the license application has found that Use Again LLC is associated with international fugitives wanted in Denmark for aggravated embezzlement and aggravated tax evasion. The international fugitives are top leaders of a highly organized group known as the Tvind Teachers Group, which is fucking insane. He goes on to list the various ways they're associated, and Grant did his fucking research. He cited that one of them notarized a signature of one of the five fugitives listed in 1998, suggesting a personal connection. Like, Grant was doing his fucking research.
And he linked is a big inspiration. She changes the world.
He linked a YouTube video on this written document. Like, this man is not fucking around. This is, again, Grant Wilson at the Community and Planning Economic Development in Minneapolis. So, like, what the fuck is he talking about, right? What is Tevin Teachers Group, and why is it run by international fugitives? What the hell is going on? And how is it connected with Hughes again? To answer that, we have to go back in time to Denmark to 1939 to witness the birth of Mogens Amdi Petersen. Mogens Amdi Petersen is the protagonist of our story today. Now, the five international fugitives that were listed on the Minneapolis document.
He's a Dane.
Mogens Amdi Petersen is one of them. There's also four other girl bosses, but the story is confusing enough without
naming all five Danes.
So we're not going to talk about the other girl bosses. Our main protagonist, right, is Mogens Amdi Petersen. Mm-hmm. We'll go back to the girl bosses at some point, though. Mogens Amdi Petersen is born to a middle-class family. His father is a school headmaster, and Petersen starts teaching high school by the age of 23. By all accounts, he grows up a confident, charismatic, fucking hippie. Like, this guy is as left as you can go. He travels the world and bears witness to a ton of, like, poverty and all that stuff. And he's like, I'm going to change the world. And his dad's a headmaster of a school, so he's like, you know, I'm going to do it through school.
Foxes.
He's got long hair, he wears sweaters, and allegedly he was arrested for throwing rocks at the police during a protest against a neo-Nazi group in northern Germany, which is cool.
Good. Objectively cool.
Objectively dope as hell. I haven't seen the arrest record, so, like, I couldn't corroborate this because I can't find a fucking Danish arrest record from 1969. But a Danish newspaper called BT reported it, that he served 6 months in jail, was assigned to pack toilet paper for $2 a day in prison. I don't know why I felt like I had to mention that. I should have deleted that. He's able to advocate for movie nights for other inmates and help them get access to, like, more books and stuff, proving that he's charismatic.
Yeah.
And is, like, down for the leftist movement.
Yeah, wait, we're not going to turn against him, are we? I really like this guy so far.
Well, here's my question. Have you ever heard of Jim Jones, the guy who did Jonestown?
His big project. Yeah, I've heard of it.
So what a lot of people don't talk about with Jim Jones is that 70% of his congregation was black, because he was, I don't know if you know any of this, he was very able to speak on, like, racial injustice and poverty and all this stuff. And he got, like, the way he got so many followers was by appealing to black people, being like, I'm down for the cause, like, I'm all this stuff, able to eloquently speak on it while also being the hugest piece of shit who's ever existed.
Identifying people who are vulnerable and want. So that's fucked.
Ooh, and
can't swear, sorry.
I've been swearing this whole time. What do you mean you can't swear?
Sorry, I haven't been listening to a word you said, actually.
But it's so fucked up, right? Like, that is how Jim Jones is able to wind up murdering more than 900 people. Mm-hmm. That is kind of the vibe I get when I read about Mogens Amdi Petersen. Mm. Like, at the beginning of his career, he was very down with the movement, very cool, very leftist. But as we go on, you are not going to be rooting for him anymore.
Oh,
so really enjoy now, where he's a cool guy.
Well, now I can enjoy it. I shouldn't have asked.
Well, you know, this is kind of the end of his tenure of being cool. So
his flop era is coming.
So shortly after his prison sentence, he decides to open an alternative school system in Denmark. This is Mogens Amdi Petersen, not Jim Jones.
Jones is over. We're over.
He's
him.
Canceled. We finally canceled him. We got him, boys. So shortly after his prison sentence, Mogens Amdi Petersen decides to open an alternative school system in Denmark. I don't know how much you know about, like, the troubled teen industry
in Denmark.
The US. I mean, I don't know shit about it in Denmark, but in the U.S., like, and in Denmark, you're allowed to legally open a school that, like, maybe doesn't have the education certifications that you need.
Mm.
If it's, like, an alternative school that usually caters to, like, troubled teens. So, like,
yeah.
A lot of the times you need, like, very special qualified people, because sometimes these teens are, like, a danger to themselves and others, and they need, like, special 24-hour care. That's not what we get at these schools, as we'll find out. And that's not what you get at, like, most fucking troubled teen schools. Like, they're awful. Petersen is able to secure an incredible amount of government funding for his schools, because that's something that, like, is a good cause, right? Like, you want teens to be rehabilitated and, like, adjust to society. Mm-hmm. The controlling body of these schools that he makes is called Tvind. Teachers Group refers to the inner circle of Tvind, but for the story, they're just going to be used interchangeably because I'm fucking stupid. Again, he's got a ton of funding from the Danish government because he's very intelligent and charismatic. And I don't want to sound like I'm talking him up, but, like,
you kind of are.
This stuff is just
I'm on his side right now.
The stuff that happens is just so fucking crazy. You're like, how did he do any of this? And it's because he's, like, a genius and so charismatic.
And hot.
I wish he was hot. I looked up a picture and he's not hot enough.
Hot enough for what?
We'll find out. So between
wait, how hot does he have to be to get away with these crimes that he's about
hot,
to commit?
He's just got to be hotter. You know?
Don't know where the line is, but we know he's not there.
He's not there. So between 1969 and 1979 is what we're going to talk about right now. He takes an active role in the schools for the first couple of years. Per Monica Ung and David Jackson at the Chicago Tribune write-up in 2004, he's got horn-rimmed glasses and an infectious grin, which I felt like was necessary to include.
Yeah, that sounds hot.
The 30-year-old attracted a cadre of dedicated educators who embraced his pedagogical method. Teach youngsters how the world works by taking them deep into it. In ramshackle buses and reconditioned sailboats, Peterson's students made months-long journeys to Africa and the Far East. This is written in 2004. Peterson built wide support for the collective he called to Vind. So his schools, instead of like sitting in class learning math, are like going to different areas of the world and quote unquote helping the poor, allegedly. He runs the schools himself while also developing new projects, which he has time for because he's at sea and not actually fucking teaching. Like,
Time he's works just, different at sea.
Well, he's just on a boat with a bunch of teenagers. Like, he's not doing that much teaching. So he has time to start a lot of other projects that we'll talk about. But he is busy. This man's on it. Almost immediately, Danish reporters are suspecting Peterson of fraud because he's securing an incredible amount of money to take teenagers on a boat, and he's not publishing any like recidivism rates or like any of how successful this is. Mm-hmm. So immediately they're like, "What? How are you getting this much money to just fuck around?" Again, this is according to Durham and the Chicago Tribune, but I didn't find any of the Danish newspapers being suspicious of it, so I'm taking secondhand word for it. Because again, how am I supposed to fucking find that from the 70s? So sorry about that. Per a court document from 2001 that we'll talk about, at this point there's anywhere between 300 and 500 people who are loosely associated with these schools, who like either work for the schools, teach for the schools, or do a variety of his other projects. Because people are suspecting him of fraud, and because he's reported to be fucking paranoid, and he's had like run-ins with the police before and spent 6 months in jail, he goes into hiding and is not seen for 22 years. No public appearances. He orders the mass burning of evidence connecting him to Dvind.
Oh, no.
Starts ordering people to only use burner phones when they talk to him, and again, isn't seen in public for 22 years. That doesn't mean he's not controlling the stuff that's going on, but nobody sees him doing it. And he's not photographed for 22 years.
Which easy is, to disappear when you live on a boat.
He's getting a BBL. Yeah. That's what he's doing.
Wait, and you're saying he's not hot?
So there's a brief list of schools that he's got. He's got the One World Center in Massachusetts, One World Center in Michigan, College for International Cooperation and Development, DRH Norway, Richardville Academy, KwaZulu Natal Experimental College in South Africa, and the Necessary Teacher Training College. This is just to get an idea of, like, he's got a lot of that are schools. Now, after 1979, when he goes into hiding, he takes a less active role in the actual teaching of students, and this is where shit gets, like, real dark. There will be mentions of child abuse, so if you want to skip ahead just, like, 2 or 3 minutes, if that's not what you're down to listening to, but I asked Jaxie before, so she's listening. Cut straight to the bad parts. The schools immediately go to shit. Not that they were ever, like, amazing in the first place, but now there's more people around to document how bad they are and more survivors coming out. And Tom Bristow of the Eastern Daily interviewed a bunch of students and also FOIA'd a charity commission report, Freedom of Information Acted, a charity commission report, which is badass. Steve Chase, 44, claims, "It was horrific. I used to run away all the time. I had my fingers snapped, but I was not allowed to go to the hospital, and they would get lollipop sticks to fix it." Lee Penny said that he was taken out of school because his teacher dragged him across the floor and slammed his arm in a door. "It was run by violence and intimidation, and I left with no qualifications." Michael Rose, this one's a little happier, who was at the school in 1990, successfully sued his social services department in Barnet in 2001 for sending him to this abusive school. Because this is it's mostly boys that go to these schools, because this is for troubled teens and they've got an underqualified staff, it was just a hotbed for abuse. It was not at all rehabilitating anybody or adjusting anybody to society. And it's leaving them with, again, no qualifications. So once you're in this network, like, you kind of return to this network to work here because where else are you supposed to go? It's really sad, and I cried several times reading this. In addition to that, out of the child abuse section, the school was siphoning off money at an impressive rate. The plan was to use government money to overpay for services that are owned by other members of Dvinder Teachers Group, and profit from there.
Classic fraud.
Classic fraud.
Fun crimes. Fraud
is my favorite crime. It's really fun.
What are your other favorite crimes? Top five.
Top five crimes. I love vandalism. I think that's really fun. Mm-hmm. That's a good one because it's pretty creative, you know?
Yeah.
Fraud. Any kind
of fraud. It's all kinds of fraud.
It's very silly. It's like bamboozling and trickery. I love it.
Silly.
So they charge like governments around $700 a week to take in these troubled youngsters, because again, they're getting government funding to run these shitty, shitty little schools. The Buildings and Bones released for $335,000 above market rate, according to one report from the year like 1996. The school also paid £240,000. The school paid £240,000 to an organization in Denmark for management services between 1989 and 1996, but failed to provide invoices for any of the services. So they're like, we're paying all these people, and fuck off, I don't know what they're being paid for. Per the Charity Commission report, referring to just one ship out of the five, they rented the ship for £90,600, but the suggested rental that like the Charity Commission got from other people was £56,400, meaning they're overpaying by about £34,000 on like one ship 1 year. So where is that money going, right? The school is siphoning off money at an impressive rate. Where is it going? It's not going to the teachers of the school. There's this really long report called Concerning Tvind that is written by Steen Thompson, who is an ex-member of Tvind. He writes, we had unbelievably little money when traveling with students. On a trip to Morocco, he needed to like get a meal for students. I had calculated that I could not afford taking them to a village cafe. Instead, I bought a few pounds of meat at a marketplace, had filled some plastic cans with water, and together with some wood, I placed it all in a luggage compartment on the coach. Then I drove the students further out into the desert, and we managed to get some soup prepared and eaten. However, the best provisioning of our students was certainly given by poor local peasants that we blessed with our frequent visits to their home, a very important part of our program, bringing the people together, he says ironically. So he's just buying meat, buying loose meat to feed the students after he puts it in water, because he has no money to, like, go anywhere. Mm. None of these teachers have any money to go anywhere. Also, this is a random detail. Omni Peterson has such a gorilla grip on these people's minds. He doesn't allow buses to go over 30 miles an hour, like, no matter where they are, which leads to a ton of accidents.
Like speed.
But they can't go over 30 miles an hour. So they're on, like, these huge highways going 30 miles an hour or less.
What reason?
It's not mentioned. Again, this is hearsay from Steen Thompson, but it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean? So these students are sent to schools, usually by the state for whatever reason, like they're wards of the state or they're in some way dangerous. They're beaten and intimidated into submission, dragged across the world on a boat that the school's ever paid for, and most of the education is just begging for money in the streets. Mm-hmm. Because it's teaching them how the world works by like asking them to fundraise, and allegedly, they'll get the skills they need to be in the real world. Like that's all the schools are, which is a shitty way to run the schools. So I want to revisit the thing I quoted from, Steen Thompson's Concerning Tvind. He was hired to be a Tvind teacher in 1977, and he was there until 1998. He wrote and sent this report to the Danish Ministry of Education, and I highly recommend it. It's only 39 pages, and I cried many times while reading it. how are we feeling so far? I want to give you a little check-in.
I'm wondering where the boxes come in.
I'm so excited to tell you where the box
boxes.
Is. I'm glad you brought the boxes back up, because it is thrilling to me that
you've been repeating the word box in my head over and over. Waiting to hear you say it.
You are really, you're taking the podcast where it needs to go, which is a fucking direction. So Steen Thompson is able to paint a really good picture of the cult part of it all in his 39-page report. It's a really fascinating look on how Omni Peterson is able to convince people, even though he's in hiding, to completely give up their lives in service of him. And it's all through like political cause and revolutionary ideas alone. Thompson writes, we wish to participate in a fair distribution of goods, the abolishing of racism, abolishing of nuclear power, and establishing good schools, etc. To become a TG member was close to a revolutionary act. And that is what Omni Peterson is convincing all these, like, well-meaning people. Mm-hmm. But then they get hired in these schools and they become child abusers. How does that happen? First off, when you join the teacher group as an employee, you're required to buy into three things. The common economy, common time, and common distribution. What do you think those words mean?
No idea.
No abstract images in your mind. And that is
just boxes.
The common economy refers to the fact that part, if not most of your salary is put into a fund. A fund that is only controlled by Omni Peterson.
There we go. Cult time, baby. Doing it.
In return, Tvind pays for your like clothing, food, shelter, medical expenses, mm-hmm. and you're given like little pocket change, basically, to work there. And all these, like, you know, commie dudes are like, hell yeah, I'm down for that. Common time, your schedule is basically determined by, like, upper management of the group, and it fucking sucks. Can you imagine if your manager was like, I decide when you work, and you don't get to choose?
Isn't that what happens now?
Whoa, wait a minute. it was aggressively, you don't get to choose. It was like, you work 24/7. Like, you literally do not get a day off. Like, you work all the time. And common distribution, which basically means like where you work, is also up to management. So if they send you to a rainforest in Brazil and then to like Beijing within the same like 2 weeks, you're like, all right. You know, it's just like insane shit like that. And members, this is like a big rule of TG, members of TG should not mention Amdi Peterson's name. Instead, he has decided that he wants to be called Kirsten Larson, who's his main girl fee, or the other. Like, he's just a weird dude.
Sounds like a cosplayer.
So all of these well-meaning teachers are joining this organization and then, again, becoming shitty at everything. So how does that happen? Basically, they are underfunded and overworked to the point of complete exhaustion and, like, feeble-mindedness, right? Like, they're given no resources to handle, at some point, like, 20-plus students of, like, they're, like, 17-year-old boys who mm-hmm. are known to be violent. That is impossible for any sort of person to, like, take on. And so Steam Thompson admits to his own wrongdoings in here, is like, I was an abuser, and also like, that is the only way that this could have worked. Mm. Have you ever like taken kids on a field trip once or been on a field trip?
I've been on
Do you know
field
what
trip.
A fucking logistical nightmare it is to go anywhere, let alone all the way across the world on a ship?
On a ship.
Like, that shit is
loose meat.
Fucking, with loose meat.
Complicated.
That's kind of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And the way that they're all buying in to this sort of thing is that Amdi Peterson is convincing them all that, like, they are persecuted, that, like, they are doing this for the common good, they are doing this for, you know, revolutionary reasons. Mm-hmm. Once in the early 80s, he said that he had been shot at in a car and was like, the feds are after me, everybody's after me, and everyone's going to be after you, too. The name Amdi could not be able... he convinced everyone that the name Amdi could be able to activate a combination of microphone and tape recorders that were just, like, bugging
agents.
Their... Literally, yeah. He was, like, insane.
And ugly.
You can pick a struggle, girl. Each time that TG had a meeting, the room had to first be scanned for electronic equipment planted by others. And... he, you know, during these meetings, he'd be like, you're the targets of Secret Service and police. Around 1978 to 1980, all us older TG members looked for car bombs every time we, like, went into a car or a bus, which is exhausting. And during the many years, all the letters were opened in a special way to avoid letter bombs. Like, they were paranoid that mm-hmm. something was going to happen, which this mentality just sort of feeds into itself, right? If you think you're persecuted, you think everyone's after you, like, mm-hmm. you become more secretive, you become more insular.
Yeah, and tired and hungry.
Yeah,
all of that.
Yeah. Also, late in the 70s, this is, again, all this is according to Steen Thompson from his 39-page report. That's where I've been quoting from.
Mm-hmm. We trust him.
We trust him. Late in the 70s, all of us TG members went home to relatives and friends where all of our old documents, private letters, and family pictures were stored to burn all of it. They made them burn, like, Amdi Peterson et al. Made them burn all of their personal belongings so that nobody could, like, track them down, which, again, is why this was impossible to research because mm-hmm. a lot of them had, like, burned all their shit connecting them to Devin. So you kind of have to rely on, like, either court documents or them coming out themselves being like, I was hired here for, like, years.
Yeah.
Can't really prove it with documents, but that's because we had to fucking burn them all.
Jesus.
So while his parents were napping, he writes that he found all of his hidden letters and, like, diaries and his old family albums, and he burned all of them.
Oh,
which to me is so sad.
That is so sad.
Not a fun crime.
No, that's bottom of the list. Let's get back to the fraud.
They also, oh God, this is where, like, the cult stuff comes in. Whenever you research this, it's like, amid a cult, like, it's a cult, da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. But they never really explain how, but Thompson really explains how. He also, like, upper management at Teachers Group would split up families, harass you if you coughed during Amdi Peterson's speeches, force people out of buying newspapers, and insist that Amdi give talks on, like, the correct opinions to have. Like, they would sit around while he was like, here's how you feel about taxes.
I need that. I'd love that.
I do need someone to tell me how to think. It's too hard.
You're kind of that person to me a little bit.
Aw, that's so nice.
Whenever I'm not sure, I just text you. Yeah. Like, this is exactly how you should feel. And we're mad about it.
Oh, we're so mad. Thompson also, oh God, this is another thing that sucks about these schools. Because you, like, have no social life and you're working for Teachers Group 24/7, you have no friends. And so Thompson writes that the students are much too involved in the adults' social life, as the adults do not have a proper social life themselves, for instance, with the friends outside school when they're in the local area. So the pupils are used for fulfillment of the adults' need of a kind of emotional and social life, which mm-hmm. is just even more toxic than, yeah. like, what we've already gone over.
Dangerous.
Just, like, layers and layers and layers of how these are fucking awful. So I hope the picture is beginning to emerge. Amdi Peterson recruits well-meaning people who want to make the world a better place, offers them absolutely no resources on making it better, and sends them halfway across the world with huge groups of violent teens means while raking in an incalculable amount of money. Because again, at this point, he's still getting government money.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's investigations going on, but nothing is getting cut off yet. So that's the picture that's painted until about 1998, when fucking thankfully the schools are shut down. The schools, I should say, for high schoolers or like teens,
mm-hmm.
Because people catch wind of it and are like, fucking no. Like,
just the schools?
Just the schools. So he's still got like international colleges, mm-hmm. where people come. Have you ever been in a college dance marathon or know anything about that?
No.
Your whole thing, I was part of Demon Thun.
I remember this.
The whole thing is that like they send you out to basically fucking beg for money on social media or in the streets,
mm-hmm.
and that's all you do. Like that's your whole job in the organization, which is what these colleges are sort of doing. It's just like one long fucking dance marathon. Like there's stories and stories and stories of people just being like, all I did was like go somewhere and just beg for money and that was my education. And now I like, mm-hmm. I can't do anything and I have no money now. So I have to work for Devin. So I hope I'm painting a picture of how shitty Omni Peterson is,
mm-hmm.
Through negligence alone has allowed this hotbed of abuse to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that guy. Just because they're gone doesn't mean that they're irrelevant to the story, the schools. I just thought I needed to like mention it. I thought it was important. We're getting to the boxes.
Ah, oh, thank God.
Because
I was about to leave.
He loses a ton of government funding and is like, I need to make money somehow.
Mm.
He can do that with his little demon thoughts, his you know,
uh-oh.
His scams.
You're about to get sued by St. Vincent himself.
He's got his like, you know, colleges around the world, but then the idea springs up of the donation boxes. When you have a for-profit donation box, you are getting free materials,
mm-hmm.
That you then just like resell. And he's got a number of like clothing resellers it's a lot of financial stuff that I don't really understand. But you can put a box fucking anywhere, which mm-hmm. he does by starting companies like The Guy Movement, Planet Aid, and Use Again, which is where our story started in Minneapolis with the thing that got denied.
Mm-hmm.
That is how this connects to all of this. But he's still got other projects happening that are like nonprofits going on in the world, which we will get to. So he gets caught in September of 2000. People are trying to like investigate him, right? They're like, you can't just do all of that fraud and get away with
it. No matter how much fun it is.
No matter how fun it is to overpay for a boat, you have to pay for it. In March of 2001, Peterson and his girls were charged with tax evasion and financial.
That's fine.
I was about to read the names. I was like, you don't fucking care.
Way to cut women out of the story.
I am erasing women. During a large-scale raid on 8 Devin addresses in April 2001, police and tax officials seized and later decrypted a trove of computer documents that suggested the TG elite systemically transferred money from their humanitarian fund to themselves. Because
mm-hmm.
Again, at this point, they've got several countries have development aid from people to people, humanity people to people, like different nonprofits that are theoretically supposed to just like help locals,
mm-hmm.
but just get money and then put it back in their bank accounts. God, this is such a random detail. In February 2002, FBI agents arrested Peterson on an international warrant at Los Angeles International Airport because the whole time he'd been spending time in, like, Miami.
Mm-hmm.
By the 80s, he was done pretending to be a communist and just, like, lived in a luxury thing in Miami. So February 2002, they catch him on an international warrant at Los Angeles International Airport while he was traveling from Southern Africa to Mexico shortly after tighter 9/11 airline screenings went into effect. So I think it was the first time he'd stepped on a plane since 9/11.
Oh.
And because of all the increased screening, they're like, that's the guy.
That's our man.
So the trial begins. Lengthy court litigation is not a particular area of interest to me. And half of it was in fucking Danish. But from what I perused of the 2001 public prosecutor for serious economic crime case in Denmark, he and the besties are charged with aggravated embezzlement and tax fraud, resulting in a total of 186 million Danish dollars, which in today's money is $38,924,146.53. I don't know why.
You read that number like a champion, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. I do trivia. I'm on a mic a lot. The trial cites Omni Peterson, his girlfriend Kristen Larson, and a few other girl bosses. All but one. This trial goes on and is insanely expensive in Denmark. Like,
mm-hmm.
it is crazy fucking long. But they are let go based off a technicality that I don't really fucking understand. And all but one flee the country and immediately go back into hiding. Are not photographed, are not whatevered, until later. So Omni goes back into hiding and his colleagues continue to send people across the world begging for more money to be sent to like fucking nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these clothing donation boxes are still up and people are catching wind of it and there's like some local news reporting on it, but nobody gives a shit. Nobody reads.
They're so easy to
they're
drop
so
things
easy.
Into.
And they're convenient. They're right on the street. I want to talk a little bit about the development aid for people to people in Africa. Specifically, this is the one in Malawi. But they've got DAPPs in like a bunch of other countries, which the purpose of this nonprofit is to like theoretically help farmers out and help out with education and all this stuff, which very little of it happens. There's an FBI report from 2001, around the time that this trial was happening, where they're like very little, if any, money goes to the charities. So they have no money to do anything and they don't really do much. There's an interview from Reveal News, that's what it is, and that writes, Patrick Ateka met Omdi Peterson in Mexico. He knew him personally because Peterson had hired him to search for his lost dog for 2 years when it went missing in Zimbabwe in 1998. Which is so funny. So this guy's going to be important because he works for DAPP in Malawi and like has a lot of important quotes. I needed to include that though. Because what the for two fucking years?
For 2 years, man.
Omdi Peterson is also very into cats and dogs, and it's reported from Steve Thompson's report before. Instead of like, you know, partners and children, Omdi was like, you all get cats and dogs. And he bought like a shit ton of dogs. Like, for
then why was
have.
This one so important?
Well, this was his dog.
Oh.
And so you don't mess with this guy's fucking dog.
All for, extra money.
For 2 years. Like, what the fuck?
Hard to look for a dog when you're in hiding.
I know. So he had to hire Patrick Ateka to go do it. And so Patrick Ateka and a bunch of other people at DAP Malawi were telling Reveal News that like, this nonprofit does fucking nothing. Harrison Longway, an accountant at DAP in 2014 and 2015, pulls out a laptop and shows me a spreadsheet with the names of more than 700 DAP employees in Malawi. For a quarter of them, there's a column with additional deductions. This is what goes to the teachers group, he explains. Somewhere we can... are contributing as high as 30% of their salary to the teachers group. As you remember before, there's the whole common economy and common time thing. That doesn't go away in these nonprofits. If you work there, you are still giving up your money, which to me reads as a lot more predatory in places with less resources, because it's never really framed as an agreement to people. So it's sort of like, you're working to support your family. Sorry, about 25% of your income is going to us and not going back to you. So that's rough, buddy. And an anonymous TG member explained that there's no need for force. These people are very intelligent, and they try to explain it to you, so you go like, ah, thank you very much. Now I'm agreeing. I didn't understand it. That's how he explained it. which is a great quote.
Suspicious.
And so, yeah, that is what's going on in DAP Malawi. Reveal News investigators Matt Smith, Amy Walters, and Kandari Nagia write, in 2001 and 2002, Danish authorities gave the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles detailed information drawing a clear line between Planet Aid, the boxes, charities under leadership of the teachers group, also known as TVIND, and Peterson. Despite this, on August 24, 2004, the USDA and Planet Aid signed their first grant agreement allocating $8.5 million for education, farms, and food distribution in Mozambique. Farmers who were promised help from Planet Aid said that they've been shortchanged, but were happy to put on a, or were told to put on a happy face for the projects. Interviews in Africa show a Planet Aid subcontractor controlled by teachers group members would steer visiting auditors to village farms that looked prosperous but were merely for show. So they're just like pretending whenever there's a report that there's like good farm shit going on. And it's an insane act. Farmers in the district say one goat and one pig were all that ever arrived, and both died before they could reproduce.
Were they going to reproduce the pig and the goat?
No.
How were they going to reproduce one goat and one
presumably
pig?
Presumably they have more animals, Jaxi. But that's all they were given by, you know, all these controlling entities, whatever. As for the trees supposedly planted with funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and funneled through Planet Aid, most had been there long before Planet Aid took credit for them. Which is hilarious that Planet Aid is like, we planted these trees. And it's like, no, they've been there for fucking however many years.
You can't prove I didn't plant a tree. There's a tree there.
I guess you really can't prove it until you cut it down and count the rings, right? Like, don't all trees kind of look the same age?
Whoa. Well, that's offensive.
So that is fucking crazy. Farmers say that they had not received livestock, water pumps, fertilizer, and seedlings, and other things that benefit and other things that were ported to the USDA. Basically, the USDA keeps getting bamboozled over and over again, and keeps giving money to these fucking projects, which is unfortunate. So that is what's going on there, and it's fucking insane. And again, I really need to emphasize the connection to the boxes, because this is still going on. Like, despite this reporting and despite all this, this is still happening. Like, they're not.
We are funding it.
We are funding it, yeah, every single time.
Our old shoes.
As recently as 2015, the USDA continues to allocate humanitarian relief and funds to Planet Aid, tens of millions of dollars worth. Less than 6 months ago, the Foreign Agricultural Service posted a webpage announcing aid programs, including $31.6 million allocated to Planet Aid for programs in Mozambique. Which is so much money. And that's just like one of, I think they have, I can't remember if it's 30 or 50 of these nonprofits in like all these different countries. So they're getting all of this fucking funding to do nothing.
One goat, one pig.
It is literally, Andy Peterson is doing crime from home. And it's
work from home.
It is.
On Zoom.
Any crime you can commit on Zoom is a great crime. The only good news that I could find from I'm sorry, I was talking about Mozambique and Malawi. They are not interchangeable. It was just both the things are coming up in the same Reveal News report, because the countries are close to each other. I believe they border. They
I
do
believe
border.
You.
I'm pretty sure they border.
They're, whatever you say.
They're both in Southern Africa, and I can't remember if they directly border, if they're just like really close to each other. But anyways, I feel like I had to mention that. In 2017, a bunch of people in Dat Malawi are suing for back pay. There's no report yet on how that's going. I doubt it's going well. They're suing because they're like, we have been working for this entire time and we've, you know, we keep giving up our salary. Where's our salary? Or like, we work overtime. Where's our overtime? So 2016 rolls around. Peterson again has not been photographed since the trial ended in 2006. In 2013, he and the girls were put on the red list for the Interpolice, the international police. Interpol is what they're usually called.
Oh, I heard of that one.
Yeah? What do you know about Interpol?
I've only heard of it from spy movies.
So they're put on the red list. I don't know if wanted is the technically correct term for what they are. But they are requested back in Denmark for... you know, to answer some questions that people are having. So it's like, where are they? Again, this is like, you know, in relatively the early aughts, so there's more pictures that can be taken of people, but kind of no one gives a shit. So Andy Peterson and the girls in 2016 are found at a luxury facility in Mexico, a bunch of miles off the southern coast of California, and the compound is huge. It is an it's the hottest thing in this story. It is a sexually huge compound. And a well-known fact in the fraud community, if you're part of the fraud community.
All our group chats talk about this.
Is that if you have enough money, you are absolutely allowed to flee to Mexico and you will not be extradited by the government. That is like a common known thing for fraudsters.
We all talk about it.
Me and the other girls, we've all been speaking. The five main ones on the Interpol's watch list, no attempt has been made by the Mexican government to send them back, and it doesn't seem like it's going
to
happen anytime
soon. They have
other
things to worry
about. As recently as 2020, he was filmed at a Costco in Mexico. Just like shopping with the girls.
Good taste, man. I'm a big Costco fan.
So again, I don't know if wanted is the technically correct term, but like they are on the watch list and they are wanted back in Denmark.
Desired.
Requested, desired, called, beckoned. And they are refusing the call to action. So that leaves us from 2016 to now. Again, the most recent bit of activity is that is the Costco sighting. Planet Aid had sued Reveal News, which I was extensively quoting from about the Dat Malawi stuff, had sued them for being like, you are conspiring against us to like cut off business transactions. And as recently as 2020, I believe there was a W that was to be had at that trial. A W for Reveal News, a W for the good guys.
For the hot people.
So the bins are still, the clothing bins, the clothing donation boxes, are still legally allowed to operate wherever. And the U.S. government has repeatedly ignored inquiries, even from the FBI in 2002, to stop sending funds to these fucking organizations. It's insane. So these bins still exist, and every time you put clothes into them, you're funding a luxury compound and Omni Peterson's bank account.
Costco runs. Pistachios in bulk, thanks to your old dog.
Those $1.50 hot dogs. You are funding them whenever you put your fucking clothes. Kumbani Kufundiko says to Reveal News, the United States people, I think they should know the teacher group has used their money in a way that is not for the intended purpose, where they want to help the community. They want to help poor farmers. They want to help Africans. It's not like that, Kufundiko says. They're helping somebody who is in Mexico building mansions. And I could not have said it any better myself. Like, that is fucking crazy.
And these still exist. Like, these boxes are still around.
They're still, oh my God. I was on the way to your Halloween party the other week, and there's you again, Ben, like, on Diversia on the way to your house. Yeah, between my house and your house. Or maybe it's on Addison. It's on one of those things. I was in a Lyft, and, you know, I was on my way being drunk. Yeah, I don't know.
Focus.
But I, like, Sarah was in the car, and I, like, did a double take. Like, I saw a crime happen. And she was like, what is that? And I was like, it's a use again, Ben. And she was like, I don't care. So that is the entire story of the international fugitives that are still beckoned by Interpol that operate the bins that still exist in this country today. There is no happy ending. There is no, it's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the best I can say at the end of this story is that, like, fucking do your research before you put your clothes into a box. Just here's
are there good ones?
There's,
is, I guess, the main question.
What you had said at the beginning about going directly to thrift stores to put your clothes there, like, yeah, that is one of the better things you can do. There are also, like, I go to Out of the Closet, which is near Halstead and Roscoe. There's also, like, oh God, I can't remember. I think it's
I do Buy Nothing groups a lot too. If you just post, like, a bunch of your clothes, that way you know it's going to someone who, like, wants it,
mm-hmm,
rather than just because
I used to work. You elaborate on the Buy Nothing group. What is that?
Well, it's just like this project in America where the whole idea is, don't buy anything new because everything you'll ever need already exists.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're getting rid of something, someone else could potentially need that thing that you're getting rid of. So it's mostly on Facebook, mm-hmm, which is sad because I want to delete my Facebook so bad. But that's like the one thing that I use it for.
Yeah.
And I use it for all the time. You just like, hey, this is a thing I'm getting rid of. And mm-hmm, if someone wants it, they take it. Or if you're looking for something, like, say I wanted to make like a big batch of some sort of drink, but I don't have a big container. I'm like, hey, does anyone have a big container they don't use? And then,
yeah,
no, it's all like neighborhood based. So it's all about like feeding into your community and like community aid and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. Cause that way when it's like a lot of stuff and I'm feeling lazy, I'll take it to a thrift store, but I feel way better about just posting. Cause that way I know that whoever takes it, like, actively wanted it,
mm-hmm,
enough to come pick it up for my house, you know, rather than just like, because I used to work at a thrift store in high school, and like the amount of things that were thrown away is really a bummer. Mm-hmm. Disappointing.
Yeah. Did you ever throw it away yourself?
No, I worked front of house. The people in back of house, just like if there's like a little pilling or just like any amount of anything on the clothes that goes in the trash, or if they like drop it on the ground, sometimes they'll just like, you know, it's just easier to throw things out because it's the amount of things that they get in, mm-hmm, the back to like sort through is so much that sometimes stuff got thrown away just because it's easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, you could also make this an indictment of fast fashion. Like, stop buying so many clothes, you have to put them in a huge trash bag and
totally
put them into a box.
Six trash bags in the trunk of your car for 8 months. Yeah, I know the story.
I dress like a cartoon character, so luckily I do not have that issue.
I love that.
But yeah, that is, do you have any questions on the story? Because I did my damnedest to get through that in an appropriate amount of time, which I did. But I feel like I zoomed through it. And so if you have questions, I would love to answer them.
I mean, how long was this whole thing? That was the timeline was kind of the thing that I was struggling to.
The schools started in the 70s, and the the projects, like the, you know, DAPPs started, oh God, at any point between the 80s and 90s is when
it feels
they all
like
started.
The story ended so recently, or it's still going on. It's, right, yeah, now.
Like, all these nonprofits still exist and get a lot of government funding. It's just like no more child abuse factories, you know? Like,
as far as we know.
As far as we know.
Yeah.
But now it's just like adult financial abuse factories.
You know? Fraud. Fun crime factories.
The best. I do not want to do a true crime podcast where I talk about like salacious crimes, and fraud is the best crime. So that is what I want to talk about. Well, this is the first fucking episode of the podcast. We just jumped right in.
The best crime.
Yeah, fraud is the best crime. That's the one I intend on talking about many, many times throughout the course of this limited run podcast. So, yeah, the timeline is, it's also hard to nail an exact timeline because so many fucking documents get burned.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure, like, a lot of people who are involved are not totally truthful because even the one, mm-hmm, the guy that keep, that the Steen
Thompson.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, he was so involved that obviously he admitted to things that were bad, but there has to be more, mm-hmm, you know, like 90% truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Guilt often does not provide honesty, you know?
Whoa. That was a deep quote. Yeah, so this was fucking crazy to research. I was like, I feel like I'm, you ever seen that It's Always Sunny episode where Charlie's in front of a board being like, Pepe Sylvia, this name keeps coming up, Pepe yeah. Sylvia. That was me the entire time.
Like, how did you discover this? Like, what was the inspiration behind? Because it really is something I've never heard anyone mention.
Oh my God,
my
do you want to hear how I found out about this?
Absolutely.
There is a Green City Project box that's in front of the Wingstop at my house. And I just like, I wanted to know more about it because, you know, I've been thinking about this podcast for a while. So I was like, you know, let me look up different businesses or whatever. Mm-hmm. I look it up and it's got no website. And it's been around since 2012. So it's like insane that they don't have a website. So I contacted them on Facebook Messenger and I was like, hey, do you have like a website where I can find more information about your business? Like it says for profit on the box and I'm curious what that means. And they were like, they responded to me. They were like, we don't have
hey,
a website.
Girly.
They're like, hey, world. They're like, we don't have a website yet. Can, do you know someone who could help us? Like, I'll show you the conversation.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to say that because it's like, you know, I had the conversation with them. It wasn't like secretly obtained.
That's so funny.
But yeah.
Like so 14-year-old accidentally started a business.
So I was trying to do this insane amount of research on them, found nothing. And then I came across a Chicago Tribune article that was about clothing donation boxes in general, like taking up a stink in the city or whatever.
Yeah, because there really is so many. We walked 10 minutes to get here and we passed three.
Yeah. And so the article had briefly mentioned that like, oh, and this box by the Gaia movement that used to be here was connected to this cult, blah, and then kept going. I was like, I'm sorry, the what now? It was associated with what? So that's how I found out about the project. It's just by like looking around and being like, what exists in the world around me and why? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, helpful advice whenever you're thinking about like donating to a nonprofit or even like, you know, buying something at a grocery store, looking up the brand name and then controversy right after on Google, it takes 2 seconds to Google and be like, all right, well, that's what I do with eggs. I'm a vegan who eats eggs. Sue me.
Whoa.
And every time
I had no idea.
Every time I try and buy eggs at Whole Foods, I, you know, will look up brand name controversy. Immediately it's like, these chickens are treated like shit. And this box pretends like they're not, but it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I buy eggs at the farmer's market now.
Yeah.
Because I'm
proud of you.
Because I'm brave and a truth teller. Christina, we had 45 minutes. All right. So that is the end of the first episode of the Busted Business Bureau. Thank you so much, Jaxie, for coming in and let me telling you this fucking crazy, stupid
Thanks
little
for
story.
Sharing. Now I'm going to be paranoid about everything in my life.
Well, that is it. This is your host, Christian Borky, signing off. I don't have any sponsors, but I would like to thank the Lincoln Lodge for producing this podcast and to Christine for being the best producer who has ever existed.
With she beautiful gave us water, hair.
Beautiful hair, beautiful voice, and gave us water. So that is it. I hope you all have a lovely week.